is open. We're going to go through in order today Senate Bill 938 and then House Bill 3188. Senate Bill 80 will be carried over to Wednesday. Documentation not quite ready yet. So let's start with a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 938. Kyle's here to give us a quick briefing, and we can talk about this.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 938. There are a few amendments that we have up in OLS, so I'll just kind of step through them one at a time. The dash two, so you remember Senate Bill 938, the committee heard it as an introduced version a while back, but the dash two, it would replace the content of the bill, but it still keeps the general idea of a phase-in industrial property exemption, or phase out of the exemption, actually. But it would allow cities or counties, by ordinance or resolution, to allow a property tax exemption for newly constructed or installed industrial improvements. And the exemption is granted beginning with the first property tax year following the adoption or of the ordinance or resolution by the city or the county, and it's only available for newly constructed or installed industrial improvements first place in service after that ordinance or resolution. It does require the adopting ordinance or resolution to conform to the exemption parameters contained within the measure. So the measure sets up a qualifying exemption that would be for property between 2 and 25 million. And it would be possible to receive an exemption that is set up at a declining scale. So they're set up in the measure is kind of a standard from which to work from, but it's not, it's suggested language, but the county or the city does have the ability to change the exemption amount. So what's in this measure as amended with the dash two is it'd start at a phase out of the exemption. So in year one, the industrial improvements would be 100% exempt, year two, 80%, and so on until year six when the property would be fully taxable. Now the parameters in the bill does set it up so that the city or the county that's adopting this ordinance or resolution can change those parameters so long as it's a declining scale. So a county or city could say, well, in year one, we're going to allow 100%, in year two, 50%, in year three, and so forth. And it does allow for years four and five to be 0%. So this could really be a three-year exemption or a five-year exemption. But the adopting city or county does have to work within the parameters of the bill. So it'd still be 2 to 25 million. The city or county could increase that amount. So say they want to start at 5 million and only go up to 20 million, but they would have to work within that 2 to 25 million. So a city or a county couldn't make this available to industrial improvements valued at 50 million or something along those lines because it'd be beyond that 25 million. The exemption does apply to the taxes of the city or the county that adopts the ordinance or resolution. After that, if the districts that are affecting the property that's being exempted, if 51% of the tax liability on that property agree to allow the exemption, then it becomes a full exemption. And that language you'll see in some other existing exemptions as well. So initially it's only a property tax break from either the city or the county, but if you get that 51%, then the property will be fully exempt and then receive those percentages for the years going out. It does allow a county or city at any time to amend or terminate the exemption, but it requires any industrial improvements that are receiving the exemption to continue to do so under the existing ordinance or resolution. So a county or city can set this up for 1 year, and then in the second year they can make changes or they could terminate the ordinance or resolution. But any property that does qualify in that window when the ordinance or resolution is in place will receive that exemption and continue to do so for the 3 or the 5 years. And it does requires the city or the county granting the exemption to prescribe the application forms and also the responsibilities of the city or the county and the county and the assessor. So the idea would be the county assessor will have to do some more or less checkoffs to make sure the property does qualify based upon its assessed value and so forth. But the county and the city can really specify what they want the assessor to look at and then what the county or the city will focus on. And there is some language that mentions there could be economic development requirements and so forth, but it really is a very permissive exemption. It does, the exemption does apply to newly constructed or installed industrial improvements. There's also language I should say allowing, for the most part it's going to be allowed the exemption going forward. So after the city or the county adopts an ordinance, it's at that time going forward that a property can qualify. There is language that would allow the exemption to apply retroactively to property that was first placed in service in January 1st, has an assessment date January 1st, 2014 or January 1st, 2015. So for those 2 years, a county or city could decide to allow the exemption for property first assessed in those 2 years, but only those 2 years. So outside of 2014 and 2015, it's an exemption going forward, but there is some retroactivity for those 2 years only. And it does prohibit new ordinances or resolutions on or after January 2nd, 2026. So that'd be a sunset date for the exemption. And this would take effect 91 days following adjournment signing die. And so that's the dash two relating to the industrial property exemption. I can go through the dash three or the four. I don't know if there's any questions, how you'd like to proceed, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, any questions on this part, the main part of the bill? Senator Boquist.
Just clarification for Kyle to make sure that what you attempted to do in the dash twos is there was a series of rounds of input from cities, counties, everybody else, and if I recall correctly, you sat down with legislative council and tried to come to address all the concerns that the legislative council thought were needed addressed, which is kind of how we ended up with, you can do it this way, but you can also do it this way, because they wanted parameters to start with, but then still wanted flexibility to be able to change the same parameters. So can you just walk through the process of how we got to the dash twos?
Yes, Senator Boquist. So there was, from the original language in the 938 introduced, there's a few policy changes making it from, instead of being from $2 million to $10 million to $2 million to $25 million, and then there's also some input received during the public testimony about making this more permissive. So there's a lot more language in there to make this really a permissive tool for counties or cities. Now with that, there comes trade-offs with the more you allow the local governments to decide, the less you can kind of set up maybe at the state level or put in statute. So that's where some of the language, including the county or the city to designate the responsibilities of, say, the assessor or the local government, that language was added to make it clear that there was some concern that the assessors would be making the final call on this exemption, where really we would want the local government to, if they have different agreements, say like an economic development or something on those lines, they would be the ones making that call. So there's been some language added in there. Initially, in the introduced version, this was an exemption that applied to all taxing districts. If the county, it was only a county that could adopt this. Now it is the county or the city, but now there's that language. Well, so the county or the city's taxing district, or the taxes of the taxing district that initially would be exempt, and then you have that other opt-in for the other, what would amount to 51%, and then it becomes a fully applicable exemption. So those were kind of the changes, I guess, to address some of the input received during the public testimony.
And this is permissive to cities and counties. It doesn't have anything to do with the state government.
Yes, Senator, correct. Other than the, it has to, what the city or the county adopts would have to conform to the parameters within statute, so those 2 to 25 million limits, and then the declining percentage and so forth. But other than that, yes, it's primarily for the city or the county taxing districts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would only note that it, unbeknownst to me, I guess a bunch of the editorial boards think this is now a good idea, but I'm not sure editorial boards count it at times, but that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things we don't talk about with the property tax abatement or exemption bills is the effect it has on the schools fund. And Kyle, can you tell me how much of the property tax typically goes into the school fund?
Yes, Senator Riley. It's about a 60-40 split. It depends on the area.
So about 40%?
About 40%, and that's usually, we would, counted into that would be community colleges and education, the ESDs as well. So what actually ends up at the state school would be somewhat less than that, because I guess that's the total, the 40% or so is an average statewide figure of what's applicable to the Measure 5 limits on the education side. So it'd be a little bit less than what actually feeds into the state school fund than that 40%.
Yeah, we typically don't think of this as affecting the state, but the state funds schools, and that 40% of property tax goes into that state's funding of schools. And so these property tax exemptions do affect the state budget.
Any other questions on the twos?
Just, sure. Senator Riley's absolutely correct, and that was in the discussions that went through, generally the impact works is if you got a city or county doing it, they need to get the school district to get to the 51% mark, which is why, and 51% is typically is the model we use in state law. I mean, Senator Riley is exactly right. I mean, you got a city or county that's going to do this in order to get to the 51% mark. It, you know, almost in all cases across the board, they're going to have to do this in conjunction with the approval of the school district. Other than that, they'll never get to the 51% mark. But it does need to be clear, as Senator Riley points out, that, you know, though it doesn't impact the state at the local area, you're really talking about a city and a county government and most likely a school district agreeing that this is permissible to do.
And again, it is permissive. Okay, ready to move on to the threes? Go ahead, Kyle.
So the dash three, Mr. Chair, it's creating a task force on tax to look at the taxation of and property of nonprofit corporations. So the task force would consist of, at minimum, it's going to be one member from Senate Finance and Revenue and one member from House Revenue Committees. And it requires the Legislative Revenue Office to provide staff support. And the task force would study the issues relating to taxation and exemption of property owned, leased, or used by nonprofit corporations. And the timing of this would be the task force would submit an update to the interim committees on revenue on or before December 1st, 2015, and then a full report at the beginning of the 2016 short session.
Senator Boquist, you're nominated. Thank you for volunteering.
I know. I understand that. Colleagues, if you recall, four or five times during the session, we've heard the whole story of the nonprofit tax code is not exactly up to speed. So the relating clause that we have here and the impact of these tax exemptions to the nonprofits to Mesh 3, 938, is in the age of, it has the relating clause that everything fits in, so everybody says, yes, you're okay, you're going to do this and this, instead of what if this passes, so on and so forth. I think I originally volunteered for the chair's content that, you know, this might take, you know, a year or so, but the good revenue staff, under its esteemed leadership, said, no, we know all these things, and this has been done 6 or 8 or 10 times before, and so we can work quickly to bring back technical fixes, at least in a parameter with the involvement, hopefully, of the assessors and the cities and the counties and the Department of Revenue, and say, hey, this is the direction we need to go for a comprehensive overhaul of the nonprofit exempt statutes. Just for the record, this has been attempted multiple times before, and it has always died, like my floor speech on the floor, in which tax reform dies at the end of a session. So really the intent of this bill is to, for better word, codify that we're going to attempt in the next year, if that doesn't work, 2 years, to do a comprehensive review of these nonprofits and this portion of the tax code and come forth with a recommendation. Now, again, we tried to do this 2 years and it died. This is our version of sequestration to the committees that, you know, yours truly has been voluntold and volunteered to, you know, try and lead the effort, again, with cities, counties, assessors, and everybody else, Department of Revenue, to come up with a fix to the Medusa's head of our nonprofit tax code.
Okay, Kyle, the fours.
Okay, the dash four is somewhat aligned with, as Senator Boquist was just mentioning, there is the relating to clause is somewhat broad. So the dash four is actually the language from Senate Bill 967, which was the exemption related to museums. And it's being inserted within Senate Bill 938 as it's somewhat of a companion to the dash three as well. So it's about nonprofit taxation, or in this case, exemption. The changes from 967, the language, there's only two changes in the clarification and the expansion of the exemption for history and science museums. So the new change is the existing parameter in Senate Bill 967 was a minimum requirement that the retail store of the museum would sell 75% of their goods would be museum related. The new change is to make that a 90% requirement. There was some testimony on that would still fall within lines. You know, as you'll see under 967, that OMSI believes that they meet about a 92%. So raising that amount up to 90% was one of the changes to Senate Bill 967. And the second is a sunset of the language. So that begins in tax year 2019-20. And that's what we'll see in the dash four, the way it's written. You have the new exemption, and then it goes on to basically take all that language right back out of 307-130. So it almost seems like it's duplicative, but that's the way Ledge Council has to make it sunset. It says this language is removed beginning July 1st, 2019. So it reads a little oddly, but that's really the idea, is it sunsets the changes to the museum language.
Okay, run that through me again. We're basically, this is language that we're sunsetting.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So it sunsets. So you can almost think that, well, the changes in 967 add some clarification language for museums and also does some expansion as well of the exemption for under the Literary Charitable and Scientific Organization ORS, which is 307-130, so that existing exemption language. And so you have the first part of the bill, the first couple pages, are the new language related to the museum, and then the next language is, it's more or less the same thing, but then you see in italics, it's taking out all the new bolded language. And that's rather than saying, you can think of it like a tax credit or something, you say, oh, well, this credit sunsets in 2020. Okay. The way this works is you just have to remove the language back out of statute. So it's a little odd in the way it looks, but that's the effect of it.
And so hopefully we will have a product upon study from LRO and the task force with Senator Boquist on it, new language that oversees all this. That's the whole point. And then,
Mr. Chair, I mean, Legislative Council and Kyle tried to work to not have a negative impact on Yamhill County where they are to date upon passage. But then once we do a review of the tax code, try and fix everything and get it however everybody then finally agrees and have this structure, which is why there's a sunset on it. The debate did go back and forth, and the typical sunset we have on these is 6 years, and that sort of kind of just won out. Hopefully by within the next year, we'll have a complete overhaul, and whatever is in here that we want to change in the master plan here will be changed and brought back, which is why it has a sunset on it. And again, the instruction was trying to get Legislative Council to, you know, just as in other cases, hold where you're at in place till we can go back and fix the entire nonprofit code across the board, so that we don't 2 years from now or 1 year from now come back and we now have OMSI in play and we now have High Desert in play and everything else in play. So the intent is a holding pattern. It's not an intent to go back and say, you know, this case one or that case one. It's basically a holding pattern. The reason the discussion was, ironically, the discussion on the percentages was brought up originally in the original bill to help the cities and counties have more latitude, and some of them liked it, some of them didn't like it, so that went out. And then the discussion was as to move to 90%, but then we found out that at least 15% of OMSI's movies aren't OMSI. So, and as we would all love to say that the Good Assessor Association can say we don't have any intent or we don't have any assessors have any intent to do this, but there are 36 different assessors, just like there are 6 different district attorneys and county commissioners. So what we're trying to do is, in simple, is hold in place temporarily while we can go back and review this in a more comprehensive manner. And hopefully by mirroring these two together, we'll have everyone's participation and interest.
So
Senator Edwards.
For clarification, so the dash fours seek to take care of the problem that we heard about, but probably could create other problems statewide. But the dash threes, wait, is it the dash threes? The dash threes create the task force that will hopefully get us to the answers for the statewide solution. And if they don't, and it all falls apart, which has been known to happen in complex things, then the dash fours will sunset in 2019.
Right, on the standard 6-year sunset.
Yeah. And I think it does go to, this issue with the discretion among some assessors in Yamhill County doing something differently in Multnomah County. We've seen that, especially when you compare Evergreen to OMSI, and that discretion shouldn't be there. And it really does call out for an overview in the policy that you're trying to get. But in the meantime, we're I think striking a blow for fairness on these museums. So
why 6 years? The sunset, if it all falls apart,
2019.
So
the reason for the sunset, well,
yeah, that's not 6 years.
Yeah, we talk about
you
two,
said 6 years.
Yeah, it is 6 years, right? We talked 2, 4, and 6, and then, you know, in discussions with Legislative Council, the blueprint is 6 years for these sunsets to be reviewed.
19, 20.
that's how we got to the six-year number versus a two-year number, which was just a four-year number.
Goes out in 18.
And 4 years. Unfortunately, we've been at this 10 years now.
So it's actually 4 years.
It's actually four?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's four.
Years. I thought it was four originally. But
so that gives us two long legislative sessions.
Okay. Yeah, ideally, we'd have this ready to go on the next session.
Ideally.
Yeah. Right. So we have at least
those
one.
Those things almost always happen.
Ideally, we would have done a lot of stuff already, but
2005, actually. So we've calculated in one failure option.
Yeah. Okay. Contingencies are good.
Right, but the good director and doctor of LRO claims that we can do this in the next, 7 months. He has so much experience with that. So.
I would love nothing better than to pass this bill out in February. Is that within the realm of possibility?
Well, is there anything else we want to do in February?
Well, we'll have tax reform done by then, so there won't be much left.
Those February sessions are just not a whole lot of bandwidth in this.
But Mr. Chair, I think that the point is for
four meetings we'll have.
The point of all four portions of this bill is that once somebody puts pen to paper and people try to implement various portions of this, if it does turn out that we need technical fixes, is to do those technical fixes in February if we manage to get this through the House of Representatives, regardless of what piece it is. Because
I like that what you said at the end. If we manage to get this through the House.
Are we in a work session?
We are in a work session.
What dashes do you think are the most likely to make it through the House?
I think
the dash threes.
Senator Riley.
I'm not betting on House revenue at all.
Did you have a comment?
No.
Okay. But the other thing about the task force is because of the dash fours is it does put some pressure on Paul and task force members to do that, because if not, that's how this will be fixed, is by piecemeal.
Well, I'm looking forward to sitting down across the table for eons with Gil.
All right.
Is there any testimony?
Do you want me to hand the paperwork, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go through.
Okay. So just to briefly go through on the paperwork side, we do have the revenue and the fiscal statements for the dash two, the three, and the four. They are out there in OLIS. The two, it is a discretionary, so there's no immediate revenue impact. As has been in a few of the other measures that have come through. The three, there's no revenue impact, it's just the task force. You will see there's a minimal fiscal on that side. There is a fiscal related to the dash two, so that is in OLIS. There's some fiscal coming from the Department of Revenue, and the counties also touch on their, depending upon how many counties or cities adopt these things, there could be a fiscal for them as well, but it's indeterminate at this point. The revenue impacts, the dash four, is the only one that has a direct revenue impact, and you'll see it's about $300,000 or so for the two biennium, and that's reflective of her testimony. So they have the changes to the museum in Yamhill County, did touch base with a number of assessors throughout the state, and most museums are already going to be fully exempt, so this isn't generally an issue throughout the state. One of the changes in the dash four is allowing the exemption to apply to unimproved property that is contiguous to the museum, so that's an actual change, definitional change, or an expansion of the existing exemption, and that looks like that would touch on one other property in another county, only a few $1,000 really in tax revenue there, so that's where you see most of the changes is really due to what's going on in Yamhill County. But as has been discussed in some of the public testimony, there is that opportunity whenever you change things that it could change what's on the ground. It doesn't look like that'd be too much of an effect, especially with the four-year sunset as well. So that's the only revenue change you see in there is the dash four, is the immediate revenue impact.
Senator Boquist?
Yes.
We are in a work session.
Okay. I guess we started
with twos, threes, and fours.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking for a moment. Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendment to 6-10-15 into SB 938.
Senator Boquist moves to dash twos into Senate Bill 938. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendment stated 6-10-15 into 938.
Senator Boquist moves dash threes into Senate Bill 938. Discussion? Objection? objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash fours to not the A4 amendments into SB 948 dated 6/10/15.
Senator Boquist moves the dash fours into Senate Bill 938. Discussion?
Are they dated 6/10?
Yeah, they said 6/10.
They said 6/11.
Seeing none.
Hold on.
Discussion?
Mine says 6/10.
Yeah, okay.
We have it?
Yeah.
Right.
There's 6/10.
Further discussion? Objection? See none. Dash fours.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 938 as amended by the dash twos, dash threes, and dash fours to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 938 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate as amended. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? See none. Senate Bill 938 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Boquist will carry the bill.
Yeah, I got that, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And regardless of what the House does, we're still going to have the task force, Mr. Warner.
I'll close public hearing and work session and open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3188.
Public hearing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3188 would allow the formation of predator damage control districts, and it would authorize landowners who have at least 50% of the land in an area to petition for the formation of a district. It modifies the definition of predatory animals to include bears, bobcats, and red foxes, in addition to cougars, fur-bearing mammals, gray wolves, coyotes, rabbits, rodents, and birds. And it requires the county commissioners to appoint an advisory board for newly formed predator damage control district, and would start out with a presumptive charge of $1 per acre for tax lots of 10 or more acres, and a $25 flat rate for tax lots with less than 10 acres. And the advisory board could reconsider annually the amounts of those charges and recommend any changes, and that would be approved by the county or not approved. And it authorizes the county to amend the recommended charges. Also, it would allow landowners to elect whether to incur the charge, and so it would be voluntary on the part of the landowner to be part of the district and receive the services and pay the charge. And so then the county would have a list of landowners paying the charges so that they may receive services from the county for the prevention or reduction of damage from predatory animals. The measure has an indeterminate revenue impact. It would depend on the rates that are charged and the amount of districts that are formed, and also the fiscal impact is minimal.
Okay, permissive like the last bill and like a lot of bills we've had here before us. We're in a work session. Anybody have any questions for Christine?
No amendments.
We have no amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3188B to the floor with a due pass.
I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3188. Senator Boquist?
Mr. Chair, again, I move House Bill 3188B to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 3188 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote to take this to the floor. I'm not sure how I will vote on the floor at this point. I need to look more carefully at this and see what this district will allow landowners to do, if anything, other than form a district.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I don't like taxing districts, but I don't like predators. But I'm fine with giving them the opportunity. This is really just a new funding mechanism to backfeed the shortfall in rural counties that are there for a variety of other reasons. And it, once again, it's permissive.
Yeah, it's a new funding mechanism for existing programs.
Counties that are slowly going broke.
Yep.
Slowly. Vastly going broke.
Yeah.
Further discussion? Seeing none, are there objections to House Bill 3188? Seeing none, House Bill 3188 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate, and Senator Roblin will be the carrier. We'll take up Senate Bill 80 on Wednesday, and that clears our deck. Tomorrow we have tax havens if you need some homework to do tonight, and we'll hear from the tax mavens on tax havens tomorrow. With no other work before us, we are adjourned. Before us, we are adjourned.